Cessna Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
The Open Division is down to four. Welcome on in, everybody. We're brought to you by Albertsons. Albertsons with Thanksgiving next week. Albertsons, Albertsons, Albertsons. Head on in, get your turkey, get your trimmings, everything for the holidays next week at Albertsons. On tonight's show, Steve Bellis, former Hamilton Husky head football coach. Five times he won championships. He'll be with us in studio to talk about the Open 8, along with Ralph Amston from Arizona Varsity. Now to the Open Division bracket, brought to you by Ortho Arizona. Ortho Arizona, it's where I went and got my double knee replacement. They do great work on you, and you can get after your therapy at Ortho Arizona. You look at the Open Division playoff bracket, and now we're down to a Final Four, and I figured why not bring in the heavyweights of heavyweights, nothing in terms of scale-wise with Ralph Amston, with Arizona Varsity, or Steve Bellis, the five-time state champ at Hamilton in the day. Good to see you guys.
Good seeing you, too.
Yeah.
Excited to be here, yeah.
Yeah, you were down to four. And let's just start with you, Ralph. Do you think this has worked? Open, has it worked?
You've heard me complain, and I have to go back and say that, you know, I have to admit that they absolutely got this right. I feel like it's worked. Coach Bellis and I had even talked about the fact that it worked out so that Saguaro and Sal Point don't meet in the semifinals, and Chandler and Hamilton don't meet in the semifinals because I think that that would have probably bothered some people to see matchups that we've already seen. And so, yeah, it's worked absolutely perfectly. You see it all the way down through the playoffs. Teams have chances that didn't have chances before.
What do you think, Steve?
I totally agree. I think it's awesome. I would have loved this back in the day, seeing – I think we had two 5A teams, two 4A teams, and four 6A teams, and the two 5A teams were eliminated last night, and now we're playing two 6A teams against two 4A teams, and what two great matchups we have coming up Saturday. This is going to be unbelievable.
Would anybody have touched Hamilton when you were coaching and winning state champions if this format were in play? Were there teams that you looked at and said, man, I am really happy that we're winning titles, but if we play this team in this year, I don't know.
2013 Sal Point, right? Well, there was a huge conversation about that because you had Liberty Nevada as a common opponent, and everyone wanted to see if Sal Point could hang with you or Mountain Point.
Well, I definitely think that year they could have handled us. They could have been in the game with us, and I think we would have, I think, gave them a lot. But I think the two best teams that year were definitely Mountain Point and South Point Catholic, without question. I think that matchup, people would have paid money to have watched even after the regular season and the state championships were over.
Okay, let's go right through this then. Chandler, they took care last weekend of Chaparral. The job Rick Gerritsen is doing, Steve, and let's just talk about Chandler a little bit.
Well, I think Chandler hasn't missed a beat, even though Sean Iguano did a great job when he was there, and you got to give him a lot of credit for the foundation he laid, especially after Jim Ewing, and now Garrison's there, and they really haven't missed a beat. I think the game against Hamilton a couple weeks ago was phenomenal. It was probably an all-time classic game between the two schools in terms of both teams scoring points and how it finished and how dramatic it was. And we could have that matchup at the end coming up.
Ralph, Chandler, so far.
Continuity of staff is huge. I think you know that better than anybody, that just having those people there to support you is a really, really big deal. And you know what? Chandler has had a continuity within the staff. More than one Chandler assistant interviewed for that head coaching job, and when one of them gets it, maybe you can expect that a few go their separate ways, and that's not the case. Everybody rallied together, and you're seeing just Chandler do more of the same.
Okay, so Chandler's going to take on Sal Point. Now, I will be the one that falls on the sword and says at the start of this, I wasn't sure about Sal Point only from the, I hadn't really played anybody. And I know Bijan's great, and Lathan's great. You were there last Friday night, Ralph. You saw them in person. Better than expected, about what expected. They really handled Pinnacle.
They did. Their confidence level is at an all-time high. Lathan Ransom is going to play big-time college football. He is nothing if not excited to play what he believes is, you know, against the best team in the state. Bijan Robinson is of the same mindset. Jonah Miller, Bruno Fina, that offensive line, they're not going to back down from anybody. And now you've got Trayson Borgate, and he...
The quarterback.
Yeah, he has a very, very special skill set. He has a laser for an arm. He doesn't lose ever. And so, you know, he doesn't see any reason why Sal Point shouldn't be in this conversation, if not the favorite to even beat Chandler. He does not lose. He doesn't understand that mindset. And they're as confident as I've ever seen any team going into a matchup with Chandler.
Coach Bonet, fill me in here a little bit, Steve. He said he's going to leave. This is it for him. And to go out with a team like this, and they're in the semis now.
I'll say this about Coach Bonet. Him and I are pretty good friends, and he's a class act for one. I think one of the legends of high school coaching here and what he's done at the years at Sal Point. And to be in this kind of tournament for his last year, if this is truly his last year coaching, is going to be a heck of a send-off. And this game against Chandler, I think really what it's going to come down to is they're both excellent coaches, so they're going to have great game plans. I think it's going to come down to is the Sal Point kids man-for-man can match up, but is the depth thing going to be a factor with Chandler? I think that's where Chandler, not only are they creating the skill positions, they're good in the lines, and their depth. I think that's the one thing they probably have over Sal Point at this point would be the depth going into the game. But
I think that's fair because I was at the Chandler's game against Chaparral, and they just kept rolling guys in. I mean, Ralph, it's as though they've got 10 deep at every position.
Yeah, and it's amazing that it's gotten to this point. I was at Chandler. I think my senior year we were 2-8. And so, you know,
Steve's teams were beating you up, right?
Oh, my goodness!
We got fortunate.
Yeah, I've talked to Steve in the past about, you know, just the how much he loved that, you know, they beat up on Chandler in an ESPN game when Chandler finally thought they had an opportunity to compete. And yeah, for a very, very long time, it felt like that's the way it was going to be forever. And now the tide has turned. It's been a really, really interesting ride. And I think that this is just another opportunity for them to prove that they can stay on top of the mountain.
Okay, who wins? Sal Point, Chandler. Ralph, let's start with you.
I think that of everybody that's still left, I think that Sal Point, just with the mindset that they have going in, has probably the best opportunity to do it. And I can't go as far as picking them, though, because Day-Day Hunter and the way that he runs the ball is truly special. Chandler doesn't punt. And so if you can hang with Chandler offensively, you're going to have a chance. But the truth is, as much as I saw from this Sal Point defense against Pinnacle, holding them to only 10 points, Pinnacle was looking to throw the ball. Chandler's not going to be looking to throw the ball. They're going to run all over the place.
Steve, who do you like?
Well, I got to stay with Chandler. I just think the depth thing is
a Hamilton guy picking Chandler.
Yeah, in this game, and I love Dennis, and I just want to see a great game. You know, it's a little different from the outside looking in, but the part that's going to be great for both teams is they get to do the game plan and the strategies and the matchups and who's going to compete against who and who do you think you can pick on, and that's the battle within the game. And to see that unfold come Saturday is going to be pretty special. But I see Chandler probably just getting them at the end, but I really see Chandler winning this game.
Okay, let's flip over to the other side. It'll be Saguaro against Hamilton. Ralph, let's just start with Saguaro. They disposed of Horizon. There were some injuries there. Horizon, focus in on Saguaro. Give me some meat and potatoes.
Well, is Israel Benjamin finally going to be healthy? I know he's missed most of the season. I think that he's really what sets that team apart. That and Will Schaefer is absolutely the heart and soul of this team. He can make things happen on both sides of the football. Look, I said that I didn't believe the formula would be fair to Saguaro. I thought the formula would leave them out. I was wrong. And I've been wrong about Hamilton all year. So I finally have to flip the script and say that I am a believer. I think that Hamilton will get this done.
Really?
I picked against them the last 2-3 weeks. I gotta change it up.
All right, let's stick with Saguaro then a little bit from your view, Steve, with Jason. And there's actually some former Hamilton players that have made their way to Saguaro in the last few years.
Yeah, and I think Jason does a great job. One of my best friends, Mark Martinez, is the O-line coach there, and he coached with me over at Hamilton. So I know Mark always plays that, you know, we don't have a lot of depth.
Aw,
we're a little worried. Aw, shucks. And I think Jason's probably doing the same thing. But they got I think Coach Z, I heard him on the radio this morning talking about, you know, they're looking at Saguaro having 19 kids Division I, and they only have three kids at Hamilton going Division I at this point. So I think it'll be a great matchup. I don't think, matter of fact, I know they have never played each other, so this has been a long time coming, talking about it in theory, who would beat who. And so I guess Saturday night we're going to see who's going to win. But I think a team in the black and silver will probably find a way to win. So go get them, Coach Z.
All right, let's go over to Hamilton then. Are either one of you surprised at the start of the season to even think that Hamilton would be in the Elite Eight down to the Final Four? Either one of you surprised by this?
I am. I thought they would be in the 6A tournament this year at the start of the year. I think a credit goes to the staff and the kids for putting it all together in a belief and kind of just going back to what Hamilton football was. And that's just strong physical football and kids making plays and going into a game knowing you're going to win, not thinking you're going to win, but knowing you're going to win. And I think that's where they are. And I'm sure they would love another chance to play Chandler in the finals.
Brendan Rice, Ralph, from your view, when you talk about wide receivers, Brendan Rice has gotten a lot of run, a lot of attention. He is committed to Colorado. Letter of intent day is a month away. We'll see. Let's leave it at that. So what do you see in Brendan Rice and the job that he has done at Hamilton High? He had over 100 yards in their victory over Centennial last week.
I think that probably the least talked about story this year is the evolution of Brendan Rice. He is somebody who, you know, we've known for a really, really long time. He's known what he's been capable of, and he's a really, really special player. And you thought that there was a really good chance that he could end up sort of, you know, a diva wide receiver, as so many end up being. He's bought into the Hamilton team mindset. There are games when he's not even targeted, and he doesn't care. He's chipped in on the defensive side of the ball. His attitude is incredible, and I feel like as his attitude has gone, so has this team. They're all completely bought into what Coach Z is doing over there, and a lot of credit goes to Coach Z for coaching up Brendan Rice and Brendan Rice for buying in.
Steve, have you seen Brendan Rice enough or heard about him and all that?
When he was going to be a sophomore, the biggest thing we're working on with him was being that team player and buying into the team concept and being physical. You know, he had the size, but you just saw in the video there he was running over people, which, you know, that comes with age and maturity, and I think that's what he's done. And Rick Cunningham, who's basically his dad, has formed him and informed him, I should say, and really he has turned into a phenomenal high school player that's probably going to do some special things at the next level.
When you left Hamilton, Dick Banaszewski stepped in, and then Coach Z showed up. First year was a little bit rough. So many players had left the program. What do you see in Coach Zadepski, and why are they having success with him at the helm?
Well, I think he was just trying to get a foothold, to be honest with you, and try and figure everything out. I think the first year was kind of like just putting everybody in the staff and saying, okay, let's see what works here. And then I think he realized what he had to do and get the people he wanted in there. And so he has his staff, the people he wants, and his philosophy, which I think is a big thing. You know, everybody's got to be on the same page to mesh together, and they definitely have done that, and that's why they're in this Final Four, this elite bracket.
Okay, so we're down to the Final Four then with Hamilton and Saguaro. Both of you like Chandler on one side. You like Hamilton to take down Saguaro.
I do. I really think Coach Z's done a great job with them.
Honestly, it's Hamilton is making a believer out of me. There's no reason that Saguaro shouldn't win this game. But I watch Hamilton week after week, and there's just something really, really special going on. And so I'm jumping ship on being a hater, and I'm buying in. And at the same time, Saguaro's so good that I wouldn't be surprised if they really got it done.
And I got to say this about Jason is that he's won six in a row. So you can never count out Saguaro. And I think if you put a little chip on his shoulder, it does wonders for him. But I think it's just going to be a great matchup. Both of these games are great matchups that everybody would love to have seen, and now it's really coming true.
Before I get you out of here, do you want to coach again?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I just got to get that opportunity and make it happen. And it'll happen, I think.
Sooner than later?
I hope so.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thank
Good
you.
Good stuff there. Steve Bellis, five-time state champ coach at Hamilton High School. And Ralph Amsden, of course, a terrific job with the crew at Arizona Varsity.
Well, the NASCAR season has come to a close, but in fact, that does not mean that anyone is actually done working on the 2020 NASCAR season, at least. It's it's basically a 2.5 month break, as in you're not racing all the time every single week. But to kind of get ready for the offseason, talk about a little bit of what happened at ISM Raceway as well. Joining us on the inside lane, he became the youngest late model track champion at Hawkeye Down Speedway in 2009. He's a multi-time karting champion and the inaugural NASCAR Comcast Community Champion of the Year in 2015. Driver of the Donate Life, number 35, from Cedar Rapids, Iowa, it's Joey Gase. Joey, thanks for joining me, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Hey, it's a pleasure to have you. What you do for communities around the nation when you're going around and racing different places, it's just spectacular. We'll talk a little bit more about that later on, but I mentioned the off season. It's not really an off season like you have in other sports where they're out in, I don't know, Maui and stuff, relaxing on a beach, but especially for a guy like you, you're not a multi-millionaire racing for a race team that has 100 guys inside the shop on a given day. You know, for a lower budget driver who doesn't get to have the perks of, say, a Martin Truex Jr. or a Kevin Harvick, like most people think of when they think of a NASCAR driver, what does your offseason look like from mid-November to getting ready for Daytona in February?
It's still very busy, for sure. Like you said, you're not at the necessarily at the racetrack racing, but there's a lot of behind the scenes going on. Like right now, I'm trying to figure out who exactly I am going to be driving for and what my plans are going to be on that aspect. But then also working on the sponsors and what our sponsors are going to be looking like next year and all that. And all that never really ends. And then, you know, on top of that, my wife and I are having twins this off season, and we'll actually be going back to Iowa to have them. So both of our families are from Iowa, so we're going to have it back there that have a little extra help.
Well, congratulations on the twins. Do you have like colored go-karts ready to go for like gender reveal and stuff? You're going to get them in a race car like 2 months, like racing plans already?
Well, we do know they're both identical twin boys, but we are still working on the names yet, but we're very excited for sure. They can basically come anytime between now and Christmas. So we're excited for them to be here, and we'll see what it's like. That's for sure. It's going to be a big learning experience for sure.
Well, congratulations. I'm sure if you ask anyone in the garage at NASCAR, since it seems like everyone has a kid in the garage, it changes a little bit now every single week when you go to the racetrack, and hopefully bringing them along for the ride at least once they're a little bit older after birth. But I do want to step back a couple of weeks ago to the Desert Diamond 200 ISM Raceway when you recognized Oregon donor Dylan Barrier. He was a former student here in Arizona at Santan Foothills High School. He tragically passed away earlier this year. And you guys did something very special. You had his name and his picture on the back of your number 35 car. You had his family out to the track. How did all this come together in terms of finding Dylan's story and then going and finding his family as well and celebrating what he did donating his organs after he passed away with his family and having them all out at the track?
Yeah, for sure. We try to team up with all the local OPOs and Donate Life organizations when we race across the country. And luckily for us, Donate Life Arizona is a very big and strong partner of ours. And Dylan, like you said, unfortunately passed away. And when that happened on his driver's license, he chose that he wanted to be an organ, eye, and tissue donor at a very young age, his mom said. And when he got his driver's license, it was something that was really important to him, and that's really cool. And, you know, unfortunately, I never got the chance to meet Dylan, but obviously just alone by wanting to be an organ donor, being something that was so important to him to help others, I think definitely shows how great of a person Dylan was. But they've been working closely now with Donate Life Arizona and being big volunteers, and Donate Life Arizona was very appreciative for Dylan and his family and everything that they continue to do to this day. So they asked them, you know, if they would like to come to a race and that we would like to honor his legacy. And we actually surprised them with the picture being on the car. They knew they were coming to the race and that we're honoring his legacy, but they never knew that he was actually going to be on the car. So we actually did a private reveal for him right before the weekend, and it was so cool to see how excited and honored they were, and also how surprised. And they weren't big race fans before, but they definitely are now. So it was something really cool to see.
And this isn't the first time that you've done this, recognizing young organ donors at the track and having pictures on the cars. What's it like when you're able to bring their family to a racetrack, interact with them, thank their family for what they did for possibly saving other people's life with these organs, and just interacting with them and being able to share that moment with them when they see that typically their child is on your car?
Yeah, it's, you know, we honor anyone of all ages, but it's something that's definitely very cool and special in many different ways. So, you know, like we said, like, you know, Dylan, he saved a lot of lives by being an organ donor, but he's still saving even more lives now by being on the car and doing things like this and promoting donations. So others out there, you know, will think, well, hey, you know what, maybe I should be a registered organ donor, and like Dylan was. So he continues to save lives that way as well. But it's also really cool for me and the family, because unfortunately it's not every day you meet someone that kind of sort of went through the same thing that you had to go through. So it's not every day I meet someone that's also a donor family member, and it's the same for them. So you kind of, you know, you swap stories and tell them each other's experience, and you really feel for that person as well. And it's just something that's really cool to honor them and, you know, let them know that Dylan's never going to be forgotten.
And of course, you usually have one of the more unique race cars at the track. It always seems like you have something fun going on with your Xfinity Series car. Having Donate Life in multiple states on the hood just about every time that you can, and typically Donate Life Arizona, I always look forward to seeing that neon green and black car when I'm walking down the grid and whatnot. But of course, your mother was an organ donor as well. How did you and Donate Life kind of create this relationship with each other, getting them out at racetracks and then being able to recognize family members? And why is it so important to you to do that on what most people consider a very intense work weekend?
Yeah, it's something that, you know, all started, like you said, with my mom. She passed away, unfortunately, in April of 2011 of a sudden brain aneurysm. And when that happened, the doctors asked us if she'd like to be an organ and tissue donor. And at that time, it was something we never really talked about before. And her driver's license was left at home because we rushed to the hospital. But we knew she could no longer continue her life. She wanted to do whatever she could to help others continue theirs. So ultimately, we said yes, and later we found out she was able to help save and improve the lives of 66 people, which was amazing to us, and we've been actually fortunate enough to meet two of her recipients. And not only that, when we went back home and found her driver's license, she was already a registered organ donor on there. So ever since that day, I wanted to do whatever I could to raise awareness for donation, because I've learned that there's over 110,000 people on the wait list nationwide, unfortunately, waiting for a life-saving organ. And unfortunately, some of those people are passing away every day on the wait list. And not only that, I want people to not only say yes to donation, but I also want them to have that talk with their loved ones. So if they're ever in the same situation my family and I were in, they would already know what their loved one would want. And not only that, but we also want to honor all those affected by it as well.
I do want to step back into racing real quick. You're just 26 years old, but your NASCAR career has been since 2011, and we've talked about your relationship with Donate Life Arizona, and NASCAR.com had a great piece on you earlier this year about how it's sometimes unique at this level to have the driver going out and finding those sponsors, and something that you'll be doing probably very vigorously this offseason is finding that sponsorship. When it comes to maybe misconceptions that fans have, what is it like for you coming up through the ranks of NASCAR as just a 26-year-old and trying to get through and get into cars through finding sponsorship, sometimes week in and week out?
Yeah, you know, it definitely can be tough. But, you know, for the most part, a lot of fans do understand how it is for the most part. You know, not everyone can be, and unfortunately, and Joe Gibbs equipment or Hendrick equipment or Roush or RCR or Penske. You know, there's only a few of those cars available, and unfortunately, you know, it's not saying that, you know, NBA might team that we can't be at that level, but unfortunately we just don't have the funds to do that. That there's just so much that really, really goes into it. You know, just an easy example would be, tires. Unfortunately, a lot of times when we come in for pit stops, we're not putting brand new tires on because we don't have the budget to do that. A set of tires is about $2,500, and you know, if it's a six set allotment for a race, that's a lot of money. Four sets of tires is, you know, $10,000. So that's the stuff that we're going up against. That, you know, that's one of the biggest thing I don't think fans understand. Just because we're changing tires doesn't mean we're putting new tires on, and new tires are definitely almost always way better than used tires, and just, you know, all the research and the development that goes into it. But something to where every NASCAR driver that is here in the sport, and no matter what car, there is a reason for that, and it's something that they've done on the way to get here. And you know, there's only on every given Sunday, there's only 40 spots available. And, you know, there's how many thousands of drivers out there, which, you know, it's like that for every sport. But, you know, I like to say it's, you know, even harder in NASCAR, granted that there might be more football players out there than there is NASCAR drivers. But, you know, one NFL football team normally has, you know, a minimum of 40 players per team, to where there's only 40 spots available every Sunday. So, you know, it's when you're there, it's something that you're just very thankful to be there for. But no matter what, you know, we're all big competitors and we're always doing the best we can, and we always want to go get that trophy.
All right, Joey, before I let you go, I want to play a game. I play with all the drivers. It's called Quick Time. Got some rapid-fire questions, looking for some rapid-fire answers in return. These are all going to be mostly your opinion, though, so I got no pop quizzes for you. You ready to set Quick Time, Joey?
Oh, yeah.
All right, first and foremost, my favorite question to ask. Your favorite track to race at, regardless of what you're driving?
I'd actually have to say Phoenix or Iowa.
Good answer. Your home track and my home track. So good answer right there. Now, you've done a lot with Donate Life when it comes to recognizing and thanking family members and donors. Is there one race weekend that stands out to you? Because you've had pictures on the cards, you've had handprints on the cards. Is there any one of just a weekend of some sort of event that really stands out to you, as in, man, that right there was a phenomenal thing to do that we were able to put together?
Yeah, I'd have to say that was Talladega in 2015. Fox actually did a story on my mom in donation for Mother's Day before the race, and then we had Donate Life Alabama on the car and two honorees, and then we actually really made the race, but we finished fifth. So that was definitely an amazing weekend for us.
What is the most difficult part of driving with an underfunded organization that regular fans, they just don't get?
We don't get sim time or testing time. So they're, you know, when the track's constantly changing, they have sim programs that tell them what they should have to do to the car, and they test that with their drivers back at the sim program, and we just do not have that.
All right, last one, and this one might be a little touchy, and I don't know if there's a right answer here yet or not. Leaders in baby names for the twins yet. Is there a leader?
Oh, man, we're my wife gets mad at me all the time, actually, on this. We're still working on baby names, but I say Junior and Jose, but she's not going for that.
All right, well, that'll do it, Joey. Thank you. I really appreciate your time, what you've been doing in all the different communities, and getting together and recognizing those organ donors and raising awareness is just really cool. There's very few race cars that show up to the track almost every single week. And it's not just a sponsor, it's a cause too. So it's really unique. It's really great to have you guys out there doing that almost every single week. And of course, just this morning though, thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
This was the Inside Lane. Once again, thank you to Joey Gase. You can check out all of our racing content on sports360az.com.
All right, let's talk ASU football for a couple of minutes. I think it's time to have Jeff Van Raphorst on because he is a voice of reason, and I think there's some unreasonable people out there after what happened on Saturday night at Oregon State. The great Sun Devil quarterback is with us. All right, just right down the line, let's go through this. Did you like the call by Herm, and then did you like the play call by Herm? Let's go right through that.
Yeah, I think, you know, I understand why he did it. I think it's going to be a 50-50 call either way. What I like is he was decisive in it. He went for it. He told the team, in reading some of the articles, he told the team earlier in the game, hey, we're going for it. So the mindset from the beginning was we're going for it. And as a player, I can appreciate that because you understand what the expectation is. I think also the fact that when you look at how he's trying to build a program, I think that weighs maybe more into it for going for it for the long term. You know, yes. Hey, you're sending a message not only this year, but you're sending a message, you know, for future years as well. So I don't really have any problem with that. You know, I think the play call itself, you know, everybody can be an armchair quarterback for sure. You know, just I guess from my perspective, my individual perspective, you know, we are averaging right just at or under 3 yards per carry in the game. And then, to try to run a basically overloaded the offensive line, you know, flopped the right tackle on the left side, tried to go big on that side and create a push. And I would have, personally liked to have seen, you know, Jaden on the move, give him a chance to be an athlete, you know, yes. Run path because he is so elusive on the edge. But, you know, those are calls that ASU makes, and they're not made in a vacuum. They're not made 5 minutes before. You know, they go over those in game strategy meetings. What's our 2-point play? What's our second 2-point play? What's our third 2-point play? Mm-hmm. You have to be prepared and in advance. So, you know, I understand what everybody's thinking. And honestly, I kind of like the passion. You know, I like the fact that people either agree or disagree, but apathy is the worst thing. I'd rather have people engaged.
Okay, so that leads me to where the program is today. I'm very pleased with where the program is today. I was very critical of the previous regime, leaving the cupboard bare, in my opinion, and missing on a lot of in-state kids, in particular a quarterback that set them back. They have a quarterback now. They actually have more than one quarterback now. I feel like this is going to be a team that the excuse of we're playing all these freshmen is not an excuse. It's reality here in Arizona. I think some coaches, Jeff, can fall back on, well, look at how young we are. That's just a reality here in Arizona. And I like what Herm is doing from an overall direction. I'm curious from your view, because you shot straight with me through the years. Are you pleased with where things are?
Yeah, you know, I was one of those guys that was hesitant coming into it. You know, I was not sure that the model would work, and I wanted to see how Coach Edwards, you know, could make this happen. And you know, I told Ray a couple of weeks ago. You know, I just said, hey, look, I usually wait 2 years to say something, but the fundamentals of what they're doing, as far as the infrastructure in place, the emphasis on recruiting. Let's be honest. I mean, Brad, this college sports is all about athletes.
Yep.
And you have to have guys. The fact that we don't have a sophomore or junior offensive lineman in the queue, you know, while we're young, we're going to be young again next year.
Yep.
You know, that's what nobody really understands. We're going to lose some senior offensive linemen, and our two veteran offensive linemen are going to be an 18-year-old true sophomore and a 19-year-old true sophomore. So, you know, I think we're one or two, you know, at least two more years away from kind of getting the cupboard back up to speed. I think we have over 33 or 35 scholarships available, but you only give 25 a year.
Right.
So, you know, it's a work in progress for sure. But do I like the direction? Yes. I love the recruiting. I like the confidence. I like how they're trying to develop the players. You know, I think they're doing a good job.
I think there's a lot of focus, Jeff, on where Jaden Daniels is, and we can all see the progress there. You're in the booth. You're around the team. Is there a player or two that you look at and say, you know, everybody's missing the boat on this guy? And it doesn't matter if it's an interior lineman or somebody on special teams, but you look at some guys and say, this guy's going to be a ball player, and look out.
Yeah, I mean, I think Donovan West, the right guard, is really going to be – has a chance to really be special. You know, I think – left tackle's got, you know, the two young linemen. The fact that you're playing as a 17, 18-year-old are just amazing to me. You know, I think two of the wide receivers, I think, are going to be really good, you know. So I think, you know, Gordon's got a chance, to, you know, to be really, really good. I think
Pearsall.
It's kind of funny. I do it by numbers. You know, I do it by, you know, eight, six, and all these. But I think those guys have a shot to be real good as well. You know, the one thing that's going to be kind of fun to watch is running back is going to be an area that we're going to get some new faces coming in next year. You know, they've got some big recruits that are already committed. But, you know, I watched the running back group warm up this week. There's only three of them.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so there's some deficiencies and some holes. There's some young guys coming. You know, Kewan Markham is a guy at safety that you look at and go, man, he's got a big time frame. And these guys are learning it. And, you know, I do like, I don't know what your take is, I do like the new rule from the NCAA where a player can play in up to four games and still keep their red shirt.
Yep.
Because I think healthy programs are mature and old programs, but you want to not just have somebody sit and do nothing for a year and not be invested. So I like what they're doing.
Last question, I'll let you go. Jeff Van Rapphorst with us. It's just been announced that the U of A-ASU game will be on Saturday night, 8 p.m. kickoff on ESPN. So it'll be a national audience. It'll be away from Alabama-Auburn, which through the years, it's like, why are they playing this game at the exact same time over on a network that nobody can see? So clearly there's some visibility there that people are looking at and saying it's headed in the right direction. Jeff, this game could come down to bowl eligibility or not, the way things are shaping up. And I don't know, what's an early take that you have on U of A? Have you seen them much? I know the easy answer is, Brad, I hate U of A. I got that. Have you seen much, and what do you make out of this game?
Yeah, no, I've seen a lot. You know, as I watch game tape, you know, I watch Oregon State and, you know, Arizona. You watch the different games around, you know, the teams that we're getting prepared for. You see them, and they're, you know, obviously Khalil Tate is highly athletic. Kind of a little bit, you know, surprised at his completion percentages and his accuracy. You haven't gotten better and better every year. You know, the fact that they're having a kind of a quarterback controversy with a senior quarterback is, you know, that's got to be frustrating for their coaching staff, I'm sure.
Yep.
The coaching change on the defensive line, you know, they're really struggling on defense, and, you know, they put Chuck Cecil in charge, and, you know, everybody kind of thought that would get it going. But, you know, again, what I just said earlier is you can have great coaches, but if you don't have the horses up front, you know, you get exposed. Because stuff looks, excuse me, stuff looks good on the drive board. You know, you and I get together, we draw it up, hey, this play will work. Well, it's assuming that your guy can block their guy.
Yeah.
And when that gets blown up, then everything's out the window. So, yeah, U of A's an interesting struggle. And you know, we have a really, really tough challenge with Oregon because they're playing for the championships and trying to work their way in the top four. So this will be just, you know, a crazy hard game for us this weekend, but we're going to have to battle through it. And we played well at Utah. And then, like you said, it probably does come down to bowl eligibility and what better place than Territorial Cup.
That's it. I'll let you go off that. Appreciate your time and insight as always, Jeff. Thanks.
See you, Brad.
It's Jeff Van Rapphorst with us for a couple of minutes. Sports360AZ.com.